This is Donald Hussig with Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution. Joining us today is Dr. Raul A. Montenegro. He is the president of an organization in Argentina. The name of the organization is FUNAM. They are trying to control, they are trying to reduce, they are trying to address the matter of the dioxin emissions from a Holcim cement corporation facility that burns hazardous waste. Good afternoon, Dr. Montenegro.
How are you? It's nice to meet you.
Yes. Would you introduce yourself and your organization and then give us some general history background on the Holcim factory dioxin emission problem?
Fine. As you have said, my name is Raul Montenegro. I'm a biologist. I'm president of UNAM, Environment Defense Foundation. It's an NGO founded in 1982. But at the same time, I'm professor of evolutionary biology at the National University of Cordoba. That means that usually when we are fighting against this kind of hazardous sources, I use not solely the issue of one NGO, but also the background, the technical background from my chair at the university. And in this case, we needed to use particularly these two main sources because the company, the name of course is Holcim, it is Swiss, the company which is based in Switzerland. It was a company that in the origins was an Argentine one. The name is Minetti. And this company was bought by Holcim at the end of the 90s. And it is, I think, since several weeks, finally the company decided not to use the early name of Minetti, but finally to use the name Holcim. And now the company is now here in my country as Holcim. But we have a long history of fight against this cement company in a first period when it was Minetti, and later when the company was transformed in Holcim. And this plant is located near the city of Cordoba, which is the second largest city in Argentina, and in the case of Holcim, is located in a very small town. The name is Malagueño and Yoxina. Is around 20 kilometers from the city of Cordoba, and in this place, and during years, and we are talking of a lot of years, this cement company polluted the air, soil, and there is a long history of fights of neighbors against the factory. But even and despite all the claims in court of justice, all the movement of citizens, this cement company continued to emit hazardous materials. But everything changed when the company, and this happened around 1994, they decided to add to the process the burning of hazardous waste. And this thing changed totally the history. Because the company also founded a parallel company named EcoBlend for the capture of hazardous waste, for the managing of this waste. Thus, we are talking now about a cement company linked with their own company, EcoBlend, that is responsible of the capture of hazardous waste. And in fact, our worst problems began when Holcim decided to burn hazardous waste. Even if a common cement company using gas or liquid fuels also produce pollutants, but the adding of this hazardous waste changes dramatically the environmental situation in Malagueño Joxina.
Okay, now tell me, what kind of regulatory process, what kind of permitting, what kind of effort to protect the public from the government? Did government have a role in making it possible for Holcim to begin burning hazardous waste at this facility? And if they did so, if they did have a role, what role did they take?
Yes, in Argentina, these kind of activities, we are talking about hazardous waste, is regulated through a national law. This is the national law of hazardous waste. It's a law that entered in force in 1992, and this law has a complementary decree which was signed in 1993. That means that the burning of waste in Holcim was began more or less at the same time than this regulation entered in force. That means that we have regulation. In the case of Mineti Holcim, this regulation means that the federal government, but also the provincial government, they make a list of all the hazardous waste that could be burnt inside the plant. At the same time, this regulation includes which are the releases that are permitted. We are talking, for example, in dioxins and furans, but also metals and metalloids. And since 1994, which was the beginning of the burning of hazardous waste, it was a period without real controls, and the more strict controls from the government began several years later after the entering in force of the law. And particularly since the year 2000, I think the controls were more strict. But even today, we cannot talk about very strict controls because even recently they released dioxins violating environmental law, the law of hazardous waste, and we don't perceive a reaction from the government, from the federal or the provincial government, against the company. Thus, we have regulation. We have a cement company based in Switzerland that burns hazardous waste, but we, not solely Funam, but particularly neighbors of this area, don't perceive a real control from the state.
Okay, now tell me, you said that the dioxin emissions were in excess of the limitations that the government had imposed. What is your explanation of why the government has not taken action when this has occurred?
First of all, it's very important to mention that usually NGOs or citizens don't know which are the results of monitoring take over the company. In this case, we had an anonymous contact that provided to us two internal reports made by the National Technological University. And these two reports were the reports of the year 2009 and 2010. And it was the first time that we had in our hands official reports from an independent evaluation. And these two reports showed that Holcim released in the year 2009 dioxin in 52% over the regulation. That means that it was illegal at the time. And in the year 2010, the releasing of dioxins was 203% over the permitted level, which in my country is 0.1 nanogram per cubic meters of air. This is corrected for a 10% of carbon dioxide. And this is a very historical a cornerstone for us, because we had for the first time documentation showing to us that the cement company was violating laws. But we were shocked by the fact that during 2009, 2010, even if these reports showed that Holcim was violating national regulation, we don't found it claims or reactions from the federal or the provincial government. That's the first decision we take it jointly with our lawyers and jointly working with the neighbors of Joxina, which are the most more affected because they live very close to the plant, is to disseminate this information to society. And we used our TV program, which is very strong and very popular program for presenting this violation to everybody. And I think that this was the first time that we had specific data coming from the inside of the company showing illegal procedures. And why the government don't react it as we expect, I think that this is more a matter, in a first approach, of lack of efficiency for controlling. I think that more investigation is needed for understanding why having two technical reports that demonstrated illegal procedures, why they don't cut it, the activities of the plant until the accomplishment of the regulation. This is a question that don't has yet answer.
Tell me, How much public involvement are you seeing? What is the role of the average person who lives in the area where the emissions are being released? What are people doing to help get government to enforce these laws?
This is, and this situation is not a particular situation of Malagueño Joxina in Córdoba, but I think that same situation happens in those countries where Holcim works, like in Mexico or like in Brazil. You have a lot of people that live near the plant that work inside the plant. And this is a very embarrassing situation because it's not easy for those people that work inside to make criticism from the outside. That's this was the first and main problem in the resistance, the social resistance of the public against this company. But you know, this was an accumulation of attitudes, of cases of pollution, of odors at night, information spread among the different neighbors that show to them the risks, and finally, and I think this was also a social cornerstone, they were organized. In fact, we are working with this group of neighbors, and they decided to fight, even having this problem that they live in the middle of quarters of neighborhoods that in one side have the houses and families of people working inside the factory, and at the same time houses and families that receive the pollutants of the factory. But finally, the work of these neighbors make it a great difference. And now there is an increasing resistance in South, particularly Joxina, against the burning of hazardous waste. And of course, we are working jointly with them. But we don't perceive any change inside the procedures of the company, particularly vis-à-vis the continuity of burning of hazardous waste. I think the political decision of the company was to continue with this 15% of waste being hazardous waste.
So what percentage of waste?
It's 15%.
Okay.
Because the national authority gave the permit and established which is the percentage of fuel.
Okay.
Usually in other plants that burn toxic waste, cement plants that burn toxic waste in Argentina, usually is not more than 25%. In this case, it's a lower amount, 15%.
Tell me, what is the health of the people like who are living near the cement factory?
This is also part of the problem because, you know, there is not solely a lack of environmental monitoring, that means monitoring of air, of soil, of living organisms, even samples of blood. And there is no really environmental and biological monitoring. But the worst thing is that we don't have epidemiological studies. That means that there is no specific data about morbidity, that means all diseases, and mortality in the area under the cloud of pollutants coming from the cement company. Thus, the neighbors and Funan and my chair at the University University. We have a format for making this study of morbidity and mortality, because even if we don't have a formal epidemiological study, you know, all this process of fights produced like a clarification of the risk, and a lot of people contact the neighbors that are centralized in the fights, and showing effects on the respiratory system, on the skin, effect on the skin exposed to pollutants, and so on. I think that we need to take in account that in most of Argentina there is no continuous epidemiological surveys. Thus, in each case of conflict, you need to undertake the epidemiological study. But if you don't have different evaluation in different years, is quite difficult to make comparisons. Thus, I think that the lack of environmental monitoring, independent environmental monitoring and biological monitoring, and the lack of epidemiological studies really is a good news for the cement factories, because it's very difficult to make the linkage between releases and effects in the health of public affected by dioxin, furans, metals, metalloids, and other pollutants released by the factory.
What you say is exactly what we have concluded. We are involved with industrial releases of cancer-causing chemicals like the dioxins and the carcinogenic metals, lead, arsenic, cadmium. And what we have found is that this matter of there not being any measuring of whether these chemicals are in the bodies of the people who live near the factories, that is a problem. And then beyond that, this problem of not having the epidemiological studies that would produce the link between the exposure, the body burden, and the disease outcome, lacking both those big parts of what is taking place, it is very difficult to resist the poisoning of people. You know what's going on. You know that these chemicals are there and that people are getting them in their bodies and they are being poisoned. But to have the scientific data to present to the government and the corporation, without that, it's just so difficult to make any kind of progress, to bring any kind of health protection to exist. What we have been discussing and what we've tried to cause people to think about is this. What are your basic cancer rates like? Are there high cancer rates in the whole country? Are there high cancer rates in Cordoba?
First of all, I think that Cordoba is not a particular case. That means that we have problems or similar problems with different degrees in comparison with Olcim and Joxina, because the variables that are interacting are usually the same. That means releasing of hazardous pollutants, lack of quite frequent and in-depth measuring in the plant, lack of epidemiological environmental studies and monitoring. Thus, we have a very similar model for example in Buenos Aires province or in Mendoza province, where you can found cement companies that burn hazardous waste. But different things that happened in Cordoba is, for the first time, we had access to two technical reports demonstrating with technical data that the company during 2 years was releasing dioxins, violating the national law of hazardous waste. And this was like a beginning of a strong process for showing first to the society, but also to the government.
I see.
That we cannot continue without more controls. And this, despite the fact that FUNAM, the university, and the neighbors will jointly organize and produce epidemiological studies, and even a small universe of taking of blood samples for analyzing organic compounds and metals and metalloids. But the truth is that this particular access to these two reports changed in some sense, changed the history. But I think that the tragedy for all those places, for all those communities that live near cement factories, traditional cement factories, or cement factories that burn toxic waste, is that it is so like a complicity, is like close relationships, very bad relationships for citizens that involve companies and controls from the governments. This is really nonsense, but we can perceive that sometimes governments are more in the vicinity of companies and not in the vicinity of neighbors and neighborhoods.
That is exactly what we experience here in New York State. This is New York State where I'm at, New York State in the United States. We experienced that in the case of a very large aluminum company. This aluminum company, it is the Aluminum Company of America. It's located on the St. Lawrence River in St. Lawrence County, New York State. And this aluminum company, they release various quantities of chemicals that are harmful to the public. They used to have the wet scrubbers, which would remove the largest quantity of the sulfur dioxide. But then, in order to save money and not spend the money on using that equipment, they removed, even though they had this equipment in place, they removed the wet scrubbers from this Alcoa facility near the village of Messina, New York. And now they emit thousands of tons of sulfur dioxide, even though it is well recognized that the sulfur dioxide increases asthma rates and contributes to other adverse health effects. And the government has allowed them to do this. They go through a process of a kind of a permitting review process that legitimizes, that has legitimized their action in doing this. So in the end, what you say of government and the corporations being so closely connected that they help each other continue to do harm to the public, this is exactly what we experience here.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there is some issues that we are underlining that increase in some extent the tragedy of governments don't representing the worries and the needs of citizens, is that we are talking not solely of isolated pollutants, because most of the regulation, even in the States, if you see at the regulation of the Environmental Protection Agency, you will see that pollutants are regulated pollutant by pollutant, but you don't have regulation for mixtures. That means that when you have different compounds interacting, different compounds that enter in the respiratory system of children, of a child, of an adult, you have a mix, and mixes are really not analyzed. There is solely the pollutant by pollutant analysis, and this is also part of I think not visible problem, because people don't receive one pollutant between 7 and 8 p.m. and another pollutant between 10 and 11 p.m. They receive mixes all the time. And the second thing that increased the scope of this chemical tragedy is that there is, particularly in cement companies, a lot of pollutants that are usually not monitored and are not analyzed. And if you make an overview over the cement companies, there is not solely hazardous waste, because in the cement company, you are introducing raw materials, you are introducing additives, you are also introducing a traditional fuel, for example, liquid fuels like fuel oil or gas. Thus, in the cement kiln, this is a chemical experiment where you are mixing different materials, and even radioactive materials, because this is also a very important issue that usually is not arisen, because you have radioisotopes, most of them natural radioisotopes, entering with raw materials, and sometimes through the hazardous waste. And thus, this big chemical experiment inside the cement kiln produce a huge scope of pollutants, and it is clear that solely a portion of this spectrum of pollutants are monitored or analyzed, and this increased the tragedy of the commons, because this is not solely problems with dioxin afurans, but there is also problems with pollutants that you don't know and which are released. And this remains in the dark, and this really not controls. And more than this, and this is an issue that is not usually arises, you know that one of the arguments of the cement company is that the clinker, which is one of the phases of the production of cement, capture in a crystallized way the toxic waste, and thus there is no problem. This is the message of the cement company with this hazardous material. But the problem is that the cement produced by the cement companies contains inside the products, we are talking about the cements that enter in the process of commerce and the distribution of cement, that the cement itself contain also pollutants, and there is a lot of research about this issue, that you can found dioxins, you can found even radioactive materials, and you can found metals and metalloids inside the cement that is used for building pipelines or for building reservoirs that will contain water. And there is no regulation in this moment for this kind of pollution in the product. We are talking about the pollution produced by the factory, but there is also some kind of long-range pollution produced by the cement that is disseminated all over a country for being used, and there is no regulation about.
That certainly is another aspect to this that doesn't get a lot of attention. I'm so glad that that your country has university and environmental organizations and basic people that are concerned about their health and trying to do something about this. Tell me, where do you see the future? What hopes do you have, and does the FUNAM have? What are your hopes and the hopes of the people that live around the Holcim facility? What do you have hope in as far as having cleaner air to breathe and somehow getting a better government that will help you accomplish this? What do you place hope in this situation? It sounds like it's truly a horrible situation. I would not want to live there and have to know that I'm breathing more and more dioxins. They're going up. You said they were a certain percentage over in 2009 and then even more in excess in 2010. I certainly would not want to live there. There's no doubt that's harmful. Do you have much hope in this someday becoming better?
I have a lot of hope, particularly when we consider the entire society. That means when we consider not solely the contribution that could make universities or NGOs, but particularly concerned citizens. Because one of the problems that we perceive, not only in this fight, but in several fights that we participate not solely in Argentina, but also outside, is one of the worst enemies of the cement industry. Is not one NGO or a specific group of citizens. The main enemy is information. And when hundreds, thousands of neighbors know that this odor is linked with dioxin and furans, and that's your mind change a little bit, and the change produced by information is so strong that in a total different case we are talking about a landfill that was located very near Cordoba in Bower. This is the name of the place. More than 12 million tons of garbage in this area. This landfill worked during 28 years, but the resistance began in a small municipality, working with citizens and with NAM and my chair. And after a fight of 2 years, the 1st April 2010, the landfill was closed. This is the first big landfill closed in Argentina. It's the second largest after a landfill located in Buenos Aires. And I think that this is a thing of hope, because the thing that happened at, in Bower and Potrero del Estado, which are the places located near the landfill that released hazardous chemicals from the inside of the landfill, is that this information changed minds. And people having changed minds are totally different, because they perceive that their health is in risk. And I think this is an example indirectly linked with Joxina, is that we already were successful in closing the second largest landfill in Argentina. And I think that the secret, and it's not really a secret, is that the main issue was information. I remember that we produced classes in the school of Bower explaining the effects of inversion of temperatures, in increasing of pollution, and that most of the people, even people, illiterate people, they describe it to everybody what happened in their place vis-a-vis atmosphere, vis-a-vis pollutant, vis-a-vis risk for health. And I think that we can translate, and we're making this, the same experience to Joxina. And information is the key, because we have here in my country, and particularly in Cordoba, a long story of resistance. You know, when you have dictatorships, one of the good things is that you have like a training for fighting. And when you have these two elements, information and clear ideas for fighting, thus you have hope. And this is why I have hope, because, you know, we have been contacting neighbors of Joxina during several years. We introduced, we presented claims in the Court of Justice for different violations by Olcim Minetti. But we needed this particular time, this particular opportunity of having an anonymous people providing to us these two technical reports.
Yes.
And I think that this is like a magic recipe, and this is also a message for big polluters. Even in the more powerful company, you have some anonymous people that provide two secret reports. It's solely a matter of time.
Yes. It is very encouraging, especially to hear you say that in having experienced dictatorships, that your people, the people of Argentina, learned how to be strong and to resist and to fight. I think we need to learn that lesson here in the U.S., this lesson about how to be strong and to fight. And I don't think we want to have dictators to teach us that. So hopefully we can look to your example and realize how valuable that is in fighting these polluters, these terrible corporations and the governments that are so too tight together with the corporations. Hopefully we can see your example and learn how to fight against this too.
Yes, I think that you make it really very, very crucial, very important comments, because as you said, we don't need a dictatorship for learning how to fight. But I think that this kind of linkage between different cultures and different people suffering the same impact, because it is absolutely true that even if we have different countries with different cultures, the globalization of production means that most of the people in different regions are receiving the same pollutants, because they have the same companies like Holcim. And I think that this kind of bridges of contact is very, very important. But at the same time, I think that the recipe is completed with working media. I think that in our case, we know that if you are not visible, you don't exist. Even if you have ill people, but nobody knows that there is ill people, it is very, very sad, but these ill people don't exist. And the big challenge is how to make visible this conflict. And in the case of Bauer, when we finally succeeded in closing the big landfill, during these 2 years of fight, we don't produce solely claims in the justice, but we produced 90 press releases, all them with a very strict technical background. And it was, I think, one of the main instruments, because the press release in a regular pace and with a particular format is your way for contacting the remaining society, those people that don't know that some persons are suffering as a consequence of landfills or as a consequence of a cement factory. That's, I think, that this production of press releases that we distributed, and this is also an important thing, it was not distributed solely in Cordoba, but it was distributed in Argentina and neighbors' countries. That's when we distribute a press release, it's not to 20 or 20 or 100 journalists. We disseminate in a universe of 20,000 journalists. And I think that this is also part of the challenge, is how to be visible. And if you succeed in making visible the problem, thus the company and even the government is in problems, because I think that the recipe of companies and governments for surviving in their particular liaison is that the problem or most of the problems are not visible.
Yes.
But if you have people totally convinced that they could fight, they have technical elements, and they are in contact with media, even the people of power, when they were menaced by the entering of 10 tons of hazardous waste from the city of Buenos Aires. It was exhausted batteries, 10 tons of exhausted batteries. We stopped this sending in 12 hours, in solely 12 hours, because we used this routine of contact with media.
That's very impressive. You are fortunate, because our group here, you know, we're certainly a smaller group than your organization, but our group, we fought a big oriented strand board factory proposal. The government and the corporate people wanted to build a big chipboard factory here in the St. Lawrence River Valley, even though there were high cancer rates here already. And Cancer Action New York opposed that proposal and defeated it. But in doing so, we lost most of our access to the media, the news media, in this part of New York State, because it's a monopoly. There's quite a monopoly on the news media here. And that particular news organization, they didn't like us because we opposed economic development in the form of this big factory, this new factory that would have been built. And so they took away. They said we were bad people, and they slandered us and libeled us, and yet they wouldn't put anything good about us. So we sued them, and then they took it all away. They refused to report anything about us.
Mm-hmm. But I think that we have the same problem because you will have all the time media and journalists that, for different reasons, don't support your fight. This is part of the picture. But I think that we try it, I don't know if to solve the situation, but to make like a bypass, is to increasing the scope of the distribution of releases.
Right.
That means that even, you know, the situation of Bauer of the landfill and now the situation of Olsim, they arrived even to you. And even you will be part of the story from now because your interview will be an interview for even your country and your place. But we will use this information of the existence of this interview as information for fighting. And this is why I'm very, I have hope in this issue because you increase the scope of distribution of your fights, even if you have support from Philippines or a small town in South Africa. At the end of the day, this is a very important thing because even here, we know that, you know, the responsible of Olsim or the secretary of the environment, with the name is of the head of this area, is known by a lot of people. We know that they don't receive the reactions of this lack of accomplishment of regulation in different parts of Argentina or in different countries. We make like press clippings, but not solely in written news, but also not only in newspaper, but even radios, TV channels. And we provide to governmental people and even indirectly to companies which is the impact of the fight, because most of the time they don't have a record of all the impact. That we show to them that, okay, if you don't know this, we provide this information for having a scope of the impact that we produce with this or this press release. I think that of course, this is not the solution. It's solely an instrument, but the idea is to fight locally, but disseminating the information internationally.
Right.
And it's like a distribution of seeds of fights, and for us, in our small experience, because our organization, to the contrary, you are describing in this, your comparative studies between organizations, ours is very, very small. And even the fighting process in places like Joxina involves few people. But in the case of Bauer, I think that no more than 30 people was conducting the fight. And I think that these are also, I think, elements to be taken in account for the designing. but we are not so we were very, very small.
Okay. Well, it certainly has been wonderful speaking with you. And what we'll do, we will put this interview on the internet, the unedited, no edits, the unedited interview on the internet during the next couple of days. And I will email you a program notice so that you will have the interview for whatever purposes you wish to make of it.
Mm-hmm. And you will be part of the history.
Yes. It's wonderful to know that. Thank you so much, Dr. Montenegro. You've been a great interview and a great inspiration, and we are going to learn to fight like you have learned to fight.
First of all, many, many thanks, because the window you are opening is very important for us. I think that the lesson or the thing that in this or in any kind of fighting, I think that the more important things is to be open for learning, and this is the more important thing. There are no experts. I reject experts. There is no expert. There are no university professors. There are not common people. There are not children that know absolutely nothing. The reality is totally different. Is that professors, researchers, journalists, citizens fighting, each of them have valuable information. And if you have your mind very open, you have the possibility of receiving and providing information. And this kind of exercise, of social exercise, for us is the key. That the challenge is how to maintain very open your mind for not resisting information coming from single citizens or coming from scientists or coming from everybody. I think this is, for me, is a very important thing. Even I am not the same after this interview, because everything changed a little bit, but you need to be open for receiving this little bit of change.
Right.
And I think that this is the solely thing that I could add for the finishing of this very interesting interview.
Well, this has been wonderful, and thank you so much. And I wish you the greatest of good fortunes. You know, may the good spirits be with you and the people of your region in bringing an end to this poisoning that the whole seam is doing to you.
It's the same for you, and I think that this is also the beginning of bridges, and, because we can join the efforts of people in New York with the efforts of people working here in Joksina. Because fortunately, in this 21st century, we have one instrument that which is absolutely important, like internet. And I think that maybe 30 or 40 years ago it was not so possible, but now we can do bridges and we can be very, very near one fight to another fight. And you are looking this now in different countries in the world. And I think that we need to increase this kind of bridges. That's many, many thanks for your patience.
Yes, thank you so much. Have a great day.
And the same for you. Have a nice day.
This has been Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution. We're all hoping that good change will come quickly. That's the best kind of revolution there is. That's the end of this segment. Have a good day.